You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, and this is the Play Therapy Podcast. Today's episode is a little bit different. We're taking a small break for two episodes from the standard program or curriculum or however you care to call my outline that we've been working from. We have been right in the middle of the principles of the child-centered play therapy approach, and I have had quite a few of you that have reached out. And by the way, thank you for those of you who keep in contact with me and shoot me emails with your thoughts and questions and comments and encouragement. That means a lot to me, and you all are why I do this. So thank you for staying in contact and reaching out and giving me some touch points along the way. But I've had quite a few of you reach out and share with me your struggles or your questions, your comments, your thoughts, things like that. And a theme that I'm pulling from a lot of those interactions is that a lot of you are not feeling supported in your workplace, and or you don't feel supported in your workplace trying to practice child-centered play therapy. And because I have been a supervisor at the University of South Florida for graduate students in their internships, I know the frustration there. I know what it's like to be a child-centered play therapist and to have schools and agencies and organizations and hospitals and all of these environments that children are not really get it and not fully support you. And it can make you feel as if you're swimming upstream. And so the theme that I've been pulling is that you all needed a little bit of encouragement about if you're not feeling supported or if you don't feel supported, what to do about that. So that's what today's episode is about. We're going to kind of take a break from regularly scheduled programming, and we'll call this a palate cleanse, if you will. So you go to a perfume shop and you smell a whole bunch of perfume and you have to sniff coffee beans to reset your nose, or you eat sushi and you have to suck on your ginger to reset your tongue. So that's what this is today. And then a related episode next time is going to be measuring progress and goals in child-centered play therapy, because I think these are related. Often when you don't feel support or there isn't support, they question how you can measure and achieve treatment goals. And, you know, it seems too frou-frou and without enough research for a lot of people. So we're going to have these two together. I think they're going to be really helpful. So let's dive into if you are not or you don't feel supported in your workplace as a child-centered play therapist, there are four things that I think will encourage you and give you a framework to handle that scenario. So the first is, above all else, do not doubt yourself. I have a lot of you emailing me and saying, this podcast has been so refreshing and it has recentered you and it has reminded you that you do know what you're talking about and that what you're doing is right and that what you learned is effective, but you just had gotten to a point where you doubted it because people had told you for so long that it wasn't true. So I'm going to put my line in the sand here and tell you, no matter what, do not let doubt creep in. If you believe in this model, if you understand the theoretical framework for this, if you are bought in to a child-centered non-directive model, do not let anyone else make you doubt that what we're doing works and that what we're doing is an effective approach for children. So that has to be the ground on which you stand, or these other three don't really help all that much. So please be encouraged that you are doing the right thing. In my opinion, I said this from day one, and I'll say it until God takes the final breath out of my lungs. I fully believe that the non-directive child-centered play therapy approach is the best play therapy model. And I know there are a lot out there, but I think there's plenty of evidence, and I think there's plenty of empirical validation. And I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the transformation of eclectic play therapists who become child-centered and who get bought in, who say, gosh, I wish I could go back and do sessions with my early kids when I was all over the map with my play therapy skills. I know I would have helped them so much more. I know they would have grown so much more. I know they would have healed so much better if I would have been child-centered back then, and I regret that. So be encouraged that you are doing the right thing, and do not ever doubt that this works or doubt why you do what you do, because you know why. So that's number one. Number two, you have to advocate for yourself and for the model, and you have to educate others about the model. So what might that look like? Because I know those are broad words, right? If we advocate and educate, that can be a lot of things. So when we are advocating for play therapy and when we are educating about play therapy, the goals are to help people that don't know the model, don't understand the framework or the theoretical orientation, what this is all about. So I believe there are four main components to that. I mean, obviously that's a very broad picture that we could paint, right? But I think the four basics are about self-actualization, number one. And this takes us all the way back to Rogers. If you are just joining us, first of all, welcome to the Play Therapy Podcast family. For those of you that have been with me since June, which is when we originally launched, so we're just now, you know, over the half a year mark. So thanks for being with me for that long, all of my veterans that have been hanging on from the beginning. But if you're new and you did not start and go through this in order, please go back, because I spend a lot of time talking about Rogers and the person-centered approach and how this evolved from there. And Rogers posited that every human being has an instinctive drive for self-actualization, which means becoming the best version of yourself that you can be. So kids are the same exact way. They operate in the same manner. So as children know what they struggle with, and they realize where their issues are, they need the time, the tools, and the opportunity, and they will fix themselves. They will become better versions of themselves. So people who discount child-centered play therapy have to understand at a foundational level, we are all wired this way. This is the humanistic approach. This is Rogerian theory. So this isn't some out in left field, like we just let a kid do whatever they want in the playroom. This is based on Rogerian principles that say every human has an instinctive desire to heal and grow and change. So I think number one, we start there, right? Because that's what we witness in the playroom is self-actualization in our kids. Secondly, we have to help them understand that growth and healing take place in the playroom, and that is measurable. So when we see a child self-control for the first time, when we see a child behave in self-enhancing ways for the first time, when we see a child use competence play and not give up and try something that they wouldn't have done before, when we see them fear face in the playroom and they conquer some anxiety or worry that they had, we see growth and healing. So we have to explain to people that don't understand this model what that looks like for us. It's not talking through it. It's not them drawing a picture about it. It's not them being able to regurgitate to us that when we get mad, we need to see a stop sign in our head and think about stopping what we're doing. I mean, I understand that is an approach, but that is one approach. And so growth and healing can come in a lot of ways. I believe that the child-centered model is the most effective. So growth and healing happens. We have to explain what that looks like. Number three, the environment is crucial. And again, in our early episodes, we spent a lot of time talking about that, right? How do we construct a child-centered, non-directive playroom? What are the categories of toys? What does that look like? What types of toys are selected? What kind of rules do we set? What kind of tone do we provide to kids in the playroom? The environment matters, because when they are in an environment that allows them to feel safe and free, then they are able to address the things that they need to address. So the environment needs to be explained. If you are at a, and trust me, I've had many, many clinicians, students, interns, you name it. I've had people tell me, yeah, I was given a playroom the size of a closet to work out of. Yeah, I was in a cubicle and they allowed me to put some toys out on the floor under the cubicle for the kid to play in. Trust me, I get it, right? That is not a conducive environment. But the cool thing is, the environment is not necessarily the surroundings. The environment is What is the vibe and how is this unfolding to a child? You provide the B with attitudes. Pop quiz, what are the five B with attitudes? I heard you all. I hear you. I understand. I care. I delight in you. Okay, we provide those. We only set limits when necessary. We provide a permissive, autonomous, free environment where they're able to be in charge. They're able to make decisions. We give them choices. We use encouragement. We reflect their feelings. All of that creates the environment, right? So yes, we may not be supported and given a state-of-the-art, fully equipped, amazing playroom. But the physical environment is far less important than the perceived environment of what's the child's experience when they're in your presence. So help people understand that. And then finally, what does it all come back to? What is the single most important piece of a child-centered play therapist working with kids? Yes, exactly, the relationship. And so when we think about people that don't fully grasp our approach and why we handle things the way that we handle things, always bring it back to the relationship, because that is the fundamental piece of change. When a child has a relationship with the therapist, all of the growth and healing flows from that. So someone might use the skills, but if the relationship is not there, it's not effective. So they have to grasp the depth and the consideration of the relationship that you're creating with the child. I don't know if you all, some of you may or may not be familiar. I think some of you came from my original podcast family and carried over. And then I think maybe some of you only know about this one. So I also do another podcast that is mostly geared for parents and caregivers, but I had a lot of clinicians that listened. So here we are doing this one now too. But the Play Therapy Parenting Podcast, in a semi-recent episode, I would say within the last several months, I talked about Yuri Bronfenbrenner's quote, and to summarize, because it's quite long and I'm doing this from memory, but it's something along the lines of every child needs someone who is absolutely crazy about them, unrealistically doesn't make sense, wild about them to thrive and be the happiest that they can be. So provide that for your kids. Whether or not you're fully supported by your coworkers, by your boss, by your staff, by your fellow clinicians, your colleagues, wherever, that really doesn't matter, because if you are creating that relationship with your kids, they feel it and they will resonate with it and they will self-actualize in the midst of it. So, all right. So number one, absolutely do not doubt yourself. Number two, learn to advocate for yourself as a play therapist and advocate play therapy from the child-centered model. Educate people about what that looks like. Three, give assessments. Now, I personally do not think assessments are necessary. In other words, does child-centered play therapy work if you never conduct an assessment 100% of the time? So the child-centered model is not predicated on having an assessment conducted. However, in an attempt to feel supported and have buy-in and have people in your workplace understand and value the work that you're doing, sometimes it is helpful to have baseline assessments so that there can be pre- and post-testing, or there can be measurable goals, and there can be, we started here and now we're here, look at these changes, they're meaningful, they're statistically significant, etc. So along those lines, next episode, we are going to talk through the assessments that I think are the most useful and the most aligned with the child-centered model, that are easy to implement for you if you need measurable baselines and you need to document treatment and progress and goals. So we will talk through those, but just know that assessments will be a way to silence your critics. Because if you use assessments that align with a child-centered model, there will obviously be progress. And so it's very easy to say, look, we started here and 8 weeks in, we've seen these changes. No one can argue with data. So sometimes that is helpful to bring assessments in. We'll definitely dive into those in the next episode. And then finally, I think this was a revelation that I had very recently in a conversation with one of the listeners of the podcast family. She and I had a phone call and we were emailing back and forth. And so we've been in contact back and forth quite a bit. And her last question to me was, how do I deal with when all my other colleagues and my boss and my supervisors and all of these people continue to expect me to do things their way? And I feel like I either have to completely go against their model and, you know, kind of go on my own, or I have to try to incorporate some of what they're telling me I should use, even though it's not really aligned theoretically with what I believe. She specifically works with a specific population. And so they want a lot of very specific assessments and worksheets and information. And it's very psychoeducational and it kind of has a different bent. And so she says, you know, I feel like maybe I'm harming my kids by not including these things that they're wanting me to include. And that just really got me thinking, there is not one way to achieve healing for a child. Do I wholeheartedly and undeniably stand on the child-centered, non-directive model being the best approach, in my opinion? Absolutely, unequivocally. However, do I believe that therapists that use other models also have success with their kids? Absolutely. Do I believe that children grow and thrive and become happier because of other types of orientations that are used with other therapists? Yes. So it's not a one-size-fits-all mold for how healing and growth occurs. So in that way of thinking, in that vein, modalities can be considered equals. And what I mean by that is, it's okay if your colleagues, your clinicians, your coworkers, whomever you work with, it's okay if they use a different model. You're not asking them to use a child-centered model. So therefore, if it's okay and you can accept that they have a different approach, they can also accept that you have a different approach. This is not child-centered play therapy is the lowest on the totem pole, and therefore you should be doing all the things we're doing because they're better. And unfortunately, that's often the tone. That's often the message is your way isn't as good as ours. You should listen to us. Well, let's be very frank and let's be very clear. If we're going to say that lots of different therapy approaches work for children, I don't think they're all equal in their effectiveness, but do lots of different therapy models work? Yes. So therefore, let's put us all on equal planes and say, we can consider ourselves modality equals. You can do child behavioral, but that's not what I meant. You can do cognitive behavioral therapy with the 8-year-old, and I will do child-centered non-directive therapy with an 8-year-old. Will both of us have some varying degree of success? I believe so. So therefore, I'm okay with you doing CBT, you can be okay with me doing CCPT. So we need to start thinking of ourselves as equals, not as the underdogs. And I know for a very long time, from managed care to insurance companies to the legal system to the school system to all kinds of people that are on the periphery of what we do, I know we're always viewed as the underdogs, and that's okay. But we need to start seeing ourselves as equals so that then it helps us to not doubt ourselves, that we advocate and educate, and we can conduct assessments to prove the efficacy of what we're doing. So I hope that encourages you. I hope that that gives you the boost of confidence that you need. I hope that that reminds you that what we do as child-centered non-directive play therapists is meaningful, it matters, it works. And we have to be the ones to help people that don't understand what we do better understand it. Because no one else is going to, on their own, go dive into the child-centered model just because. So if you have people in your workplaces and in your professional environment that don't get it, Become the spokesperson and do it proudly, with confidence, with boldness, and with a deep-rooted understanding that you are the best evangelizer for this model. So please let me know if I can help you in any way. As I said, I've been getting quite a bit of this kind of question. So if you are struggling with something, if you have questions, I am happy to take a break from the regular standard outline of what the normal episodes are and answer questions. So shoot me an email, let me know, you know, how I can help. That's what I'm here for, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And in the next episode, we will dive into some of the assessments that I find very helpful in working from a child-centered model. So we will talk again soon. Bye. Hey, really quickly, I want to interrupt the podcast just to briefly tell you about an opportunity. We currently have two openings at our center in the Tampa Bay area in Florida, and we are looking to pivot our center a little bit to become a world-renowned training facility for child-centered play therapists. So if you are ambitious, if you even consider the possibility of moving to Florida, we would love to have you. We have at least two openings. We are really looking to crank out the best of the best in the way of child-centered play therapists. And because we're a private practice office, you'll not only get training on being the best child-centered play therapist directly from me, you'll also get training in being the best private practitioner play therapist directly from me. So we're really excited about this. Even if this is a remote possibility, even if you're barely considering it, please shoot me an email. I would love to talk more with you. I'd love to find out how we could make this work. Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. If you come and if you train under me at the center, it's paid. You'll make good money. You get great training in play therapy and in private practice. And the goal is to crank you out so that you can start your own private practice and make good money doing what you love and being extremely well-trained. So we would love to explore this more with you. If you're interested, please reach out to me, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.